You know what really makes us mad? Is wasting money on CDs with only one or two good songs.
Yeah. Tell them about punk!
Hello everyone and welcome to Punk Lotto Pod, the game where no one wins. I wish I could say that differently and I don't know how to.
The game. Where no one
no wins.
Who's doing it?
I don't know. Should I restart that?
No, it's fine.
Alright, I'm your co-host Justin Hensley.
Don't start having quality control now. I mean, 30-something episodes. I am
32.
Your other co-host, Dylan Hensley.
And this is the show where two dorks sit around talking about punk records nobody likes.
No, punk records that some people really love that we don't like. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the show where we use a number generator, and the Rate Your Music punk charts, and we pick one album and one EP at random to discuss. This will be an episode that people decide to start listening to for some reason.
If this is your first listen, sorry. We do usually start off a little stronger.
Maybe that's what we need. A who gives a shit attitude.
Couldn't hurt.
Yeah.
I am recovering from a terrible cold, so I apologize in advance for any sniffling or coughing that slips by.
Yeah. I'll try and edit them out, but if they happen like underneath me speaking, then there won't be much I can do there. But yeah, we'll do our best quality control when it comes to editing. Well, I'm recovering from a serious plantar fasciitis flare-up.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, I had a plantar fasciitis flare-up and went and saw Teenage Fan Club, which for some reason, it felt very right that was the... Oh, I need my special orthopedics to go see Teenage Fan Club. Oh, where's my chucks with the inserts in them?
How many eye doctors were at your Teenage Fan Club experience?
Well, are you counting the ones in the band? Ray, it looks like an eye doctor.
Yeah, he's just...
And he doesn't... Did he say a word at your show? Because he didn't say anything at mine besides the songs.
Very quietly, if he did. But I don't think he said much.
Yeah, I think Norman did all the talking for them. And he would also be like, what album is this song off of? And then Ray would tell him immediately, it's on Shadows. And it's on Man-Made. And it's just funny. He's like, you gotta say something. Which makes me wonder, like, how they're... I've never seen them live before with Gerard. So I don't know. I wonder how different the dynamic is. Like, how much did Gerard add to the, you know, the banter?
Ray's like, great. Now I gotta be the foil.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't give a shit.
He's not having any.
I just want to sing
most of the songs.
Right.
Most of the songs with the least harmonies too. Like,
right, yeah.
His songs had the most singular. He's just singular vocals on them compared to Norman's.
Did you have difficulty understanding Norman?
Only once or twice.
His accent's really strong and
yeah.
And he doesn't have great mic technique when he's talking.
Yeah, I think that was usually the issue. He wouldn't be looking, or like wouldn't be facing the mic when he was speaking. He said he now has a criminal record in the United States, and I want to know what happened so bad on this tour.
He probably just got a ticket or something.
Yeah, I'm sure that's just him just joking about, yeah, a ticket.
It's probably like a public drinking ticket or something.
Yeah. "Oh, I parked in a tow zone."
did he make the joke? When I saw them, he said, "We've really been appreciating the we've just discovered on this tour your senior citizen menu at all the roadside diners."
No, he didn't say that.
He said, "I'm still a few years away from it, but most of the other guys in the band have been enjoying it."
So are senior citizen menus not a thing in the UK?
Probably not. I don't.
they were so good though. Like, and I was worried that I wasn't going to know some of the songs because they said they were going to do deep cuts for this tour. And I'm wondering if that was mainly on the beginning of the tour because I had I got the very last US show on this tour.
Yeah.
And so I knew every single song they played, and including the new one, and I think they only played one song off Catholic Education. So I guess they changed their set list up a lot.
Yeah, they played the title track.
The only thing they played that I didn't know was a cover. They played a Badfinger song because they said they'd been sound checking with it the last couple days. So they were like, let's play this. This is the first time we've ever played it on stage. So they played it. I didn't know the song.
Looks like they played Everything Flows from Catholic Education too. At your show.
Is that from Catholic Education? I thought that was on Bandwagon.
No. The only Bandwagon-esque songs they played at your show were Alcohol Holiday and The Concept.
Do I know those songs better than I realize?
You might. I mean, they're good.
I mean, that's why they're playing them. I mean, because I even knew the Catholic Education. And, yeah. I don't know. I remember really liking that album, and it was the first Teenage Fan Club album I listened to, I think, multiple times, because a few years ago on our blog, I had that weird, I'm going to listen to every album that turns 25 thing.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that? Yeah. And that was one of my favorites. I listened to, 400 albums to, create a list of 25. See, I'm a weird obsessive who has to do everything. Oh, but I wanted to bring up the weirdo at the Teenage Fan Club show, which excluding all the people who were there to see Teenage Fan Club in 2019. So during the opening band of The Love Language, there was this guy who was he was rocking out way too hard. Like, he's headbanging, clapping, and yelling, and just shouting between songs. He'd be yeah, woo, yeah. And it's no one else is doing anything. And he was at the back of the room with me. And I was oh, God, this guy is awful. If you want to rock out this hard, go closer. So he was annoying. But then after Love Language played, I went to the front for Eric Bachman from Archers of Loaf. And then between bands, I heard this guy talking at the top of his lungs about sweet three-part harmonies. And I was oh, God, don't be that guy. At the Teenage Fan Club show, talking about Teenage Fan Club. It's yeah, we all know. That's why we're here. And then when Eric Bachman started playing, I heard it again. It was woo! Yeah! Woo! It's just acoustic songs. And I turn around. I was oh, it's the guy talking about three-part harmonies. He had followed me from the back of the room up front. And he did that throughout the entirety of Eric Bachman's set, which is an acoustic guitar, a cello, there's an electric guitar, but it's only playing sparing notes, and it's an entirely acoustic set essentially. Yeah. And he's shouting and wooing over it, and then when Teenage Fan Club come on, that guy is nowhere to be seen.
What did he look like?
Who, the dude? Balding, brown hair, a goatee. It was weird.
It's not the guy because it sounds almost like the guy who I told to shut up when I saw Brian Fallon at that same venue. And I was wondering if he's just some guy who lives in that tiny little town.
Maybe.
Who just goes to everything. But the description doesn't sound right.
This guy looked like he was in his late 30s, early 40s. Yeah. But then I didn't see him at all during Teenage Fan Club or hear him.
Well, that's
good. So it's like he left. I don't know. And I kept hoping I'd see Mac from Superchunk there, but he was there, but I didn't see him anywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know. He must have been in the back. And I didn't get the poster that they had for sale. Either they sold out before I even got there, which I could see that. That crowd of old aging hipsters is definitely the type to buy posters. Screen printed show poster? Definitely gonna get there early for that.
So that I can put it in my poster folder and never look at it.
Yeah. I would have framed it and hung it on the wall because it was a good looking poster. Oh well. I don't know how many they made. They probably only did like a small handful. But anyway, that was my teenage fan. Oh, and then like my foot was killing me the entire time. My foot was like swollen. And our brother just texted me saying, do you know of any concerts coming up? So I should have taken him to that one, but my foot was, I don't know. It was going to be one of those things where it was like, I'm going to the show and I'm going to enjoy it. Even though standing up for 3 hours was not enjoyable. I was like, I'm not bringing anyone into this.
This is my misery.
Yeah. But I have to look at the calendar, see what's coming up. Maybe I'll take him to go see who's the next thing coming. Sincere Engineer at the Cat's Cradle.
That'd be a good one.
Yeah, it's next Tuesday. I have to look and see who else is. Same week as Jawbreaker. I can't take him to that one because tickets are already bought for that one. Though I could buy more.
Yeah, they're not sold out.
Weirdly. Yeah, there's that, or I don't know. There's some stuff coming up. Like in May, like Soccer Mommy's coming through, and Hot Snakes, and Radiator Hospital, shit, and Pup. Damn, that's gonna be some good shows coming up.
Well,
oh damn, we have to talk about the actual show, don't
right?
We?
If this is your first time listening, we're really sorry.
This is a weird one. Oh,
well.
Anything else before we dive into it?
Not really. Nothing out of the ordinary.
Did you wind up jamming or no?
I'm going tonight.
Oh,
Try and do a little more demoing. I'm going to try and bring some mics with me and see if I can get a slightly better recording. At the least, maybe I can probably get some drum recordings and then I can kind of demo at home.
Yeah,
guitars and vocals and stuff. But let's dive in.
Cool. So for this week's episode, we got the year 1979. And this is our second go-through of 1979. Last time we were here, we discussed Punishment of Luxuries, Laughing Academy. And do you remember the EP on that episode?
Rats. It was Subhumans.
Yeah, Subhumans, Rats. So we've gone through these before, but we'll just do a quick refresher of what 79 was like. It's Unknown Pleasures by Joy Division, London Calling by The Clash, Fear of Music, Talking Heads, Entertainment, Gang of Four. That's a pretty cool top four right there. And then it kind of keeps going. Wow. Machine Gun Etiquette by The Damned and Flammable Material by Stiff Little Fingers. Metal Box by Pill. It's a good top 10.
Yeah, that's probably the XTC record I would go to first.
Right. The Slits are in there. That's like their big album.
Though I would say my least favorite Devo album.
Which was that one? Oh, Duty Now for the Future.
At least as far as the early ones.
What's on that one? Anything?
Blockhead. It's Secret Agent Man. Like, it's not it's not anything great. Clockout's fine. So it's, I don't know. It's just as they're going more synthy.
It's the sophomore slump, right?
Yeah. It's not my favorite. I know people really like that album, but I prefer the next couple records after that one.
Yeah.
Their full-on synth pop era. I like it more than their first two albums, but we've got like two Crass albums. We've got Feeding of the 5000 and Stations of the Cross. Same year.
Crass. Stations of the Crass.
Oh, whatever. making a reference to the... we've got Germs. We've got that.
Yeah. I know we mentioned some of this stuff. Let's see. What's some of the lower ones on... There's only four pages on this chart because it's still only 79. Is there anything like lower down that we should be aware of?
There's that P model record. That's interesting. It's like a Japanese new wave synth punk.
I know nothing of that.
I just came across them really. I don't know where I heard them.
Yeah, there's some weird stuff on here, like Androids of Moo and Sid Vicious's solo album.
A little further down, you got the first Adam and the Ants record. I think we talked about that on the last 79.
Yeah, because there were some similarities to it, to Punishment of Luxury and even Subhumans. 79. Good year? I guess it's a good year. It's still so early in the punk, though, that it's not... it's not super diverse yet. Like, you've got your beginnings of new wave and your post-punk going strong here, and your U.S. punk is just now starting up outside of the CBGB scene.
Here's a good, get a little further back. There's, this is a really, really good one. I just want to mention it. They're called Ratsia. It's R-A-T-S-I-A. They were a Finnish punk band, 79. Pretty similar to the Clash, early Clash. Really good. Really melodic.
You know, I'm really fascinated by, what would you call them? Like the also-rans? Like the band that, what, like, they're not well-known, but they were playing a similar style. Like, I always like finding those bands. Like, oh, this was like you just said, the Finnish Clash, essentially. Yeah. I like the idea of finding, like, contemporaries that were not nearly as popular, but maybe had some decent songs of their own, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's, it's interesting how there's not a whole lot of punk records from this year. There's only something like 144 on the Rate Your Music charts, but it gets really obscure really fast.
Yeah. Well, I think you, in the UK, like, they had the big boom in 77 and 78, but for most people then, it was just, like, a trend and a type of music. Because, you know, as quickly as they moved away from punk into post-punk, it kind of shows you that it hadn't quite, it was more of a fad in the UK then. I mean, over time, it would become more of a thing, and especially once the United States put the hardcore spin on things, and then it would become a way of life. But yeah, it's interesting. It's punk's not in. I don't know. When does punk come into its own? Besides, because '80s are dominated by hardcore.
Yeah, I mean, I think hardcore is the point at which punk rock, I mean, punk in general as a broad genre and an identity, was clearly here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
It took a while for people to kind of start to go back to a not hardcore punk sound, and elaborating on that, though. But
yeah,
well,
I guess we can dive into our albums then.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got number 12 on the albums charts, and it is the Buzzcocks' "Different Kind of Tension." Where in the world are we? Some basics out of the way. Buzzcocks were formed in Bolton, England. Became a really big part of the Manchester scene in 1976. They were part of the big 77 British punk boom. This is their third full-length, and was released on United Artists Records. And the personnel is Pete Shelley on guitar, vocals, and keys, Steve Diggle on guitars and vocals, Steve Garvey on bass, and John Mayer on drums. Not that John Mayer. produced by Martin Rushnet, who worked with The Stranglers, 999, XTC, Generation X, Human League, The Go-Go's, and just for us, Altered Images, specifically the song Happy Birthday.
Happy birthday.
I think I found our clip.
Yep.
So yeah, this is the classic Buzzcocks lineup, the ones that released the first three full lengths. It's the last album they would record before they broke up in 81. And when they would reunite in 93, Garvey and Mayer would rejoin, but they would leave before... Oh, the reunion wasn't 93. The reunion was like 91. Yeah. But they would leave before the new album, Trade Test Transmissions. So This is the last of the classic Buzzcocks records. I know they had a different vocalist on their first, what is it, EP? Spiral Scratch? Howard Devoto? But I don't really like those recordings. And Pete Shelley taking over was definitely the smart move. What'd you think of the record?
What'd you think?
What'd you?
You could tell it's their last.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's probably the weakest of their early of the classic Buzzcock records.
Isn't it funny how the most famous Buzzcocks release is their best of? The single's Going Steady.
Is that a best of?
Yeah, it's not an album. It's a compilation. But it's the one Buzzcocks thing everyone listens to.
Yeah, I've always just seen it almost treated as an album. And I mean,
now I don't know if they re-recorded
in the U.S. It was the first thing released in the U.S. actually by the Buzzcocks.
Oh.
And so it was kind of, I guess maybe that's why people think of it as an album.
And it has a ton of stuff that's not actually on any albums too. I mean, it's a compilation. Side two is B-sides, so like those songs weren't on any albums, and yet they're some of their most well-known tracks.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, Why Can't I Touch It, and Noise of Noise, and Whatever Happened To. And yeah, so that's the one that everybody loves. But when you look at like their actual albums, the first three albums, what, Another Music in a Different Kitchen, which has Fast Cars, and I Don't Mind, which is great. It's probably the best of the first three. Love Bites is the second album, and it has Ever Fallen in Love, and I don't really know those other songs, though. Operator's Manual. Yeah, it's funny. I've heard them called a singles band, and I could see that, because on this album, there were maybe four tracks I really loved, and those would be like Paradise, You Say You Don't Love Me, Raison d'Etre, and I Don't Know What to Do with My Life. The other ones are pretty good, but they suffer from repetitiveness, especially what's the last track on the album?
I Believe.
Because
Radio 9 was just
like less. Yeah, it's not actually outro. A song. Yeah. I Believe is great until it just goes on and on and on and on.
Yeah, it's 7 minutes long.
Yeah. Also, this album has three songs written and sung by Steve Diggle.
They are the worst songs.
They are horrible. Like, they're bad songs.
I didn't mind Mad Mad Judy.
Mad Mad Judy! It had a good bouncy bass line.
I don't even remember, you know, You'd Help It.
That's the one that made me wonder what the lyrics were actually about.
Sitting Around at Home was the one I disliked the most. That's the one that's like, I want to look up the lyrics for it because...
I feel like a Bad Company or like a Steppenwolf song or something. Yeah, that one's not good. I don't know. What is it? You Know You Can't Help It had some creepy lyrics in it. Let me see if I can find what those are. Kind of gross lyrics. You know you can't help it when you see that girl. You know you can't help undressing her. You know you can't help thinking what she's got. You know you can't help it. You just can't help it. You know you can't help it getting into her. You know you can't help it because she's your world. Well, okay. This doesn't even rhyme. You know you can't help it that sex is good. Sex is known as a screw, a bloody silly thing to do. But anyway, we're all gonna do it because it's great.
Because it's great. What?
You know you can't help what's between her thighs. Ugh. Stop being gross, Steve.
Yeah. It's no orgasm addict.
Yeah, that one's gross too. But this one, it just seems, I don't know, that one's just an odd one. Because, like, Pete Shelley was known for pushing the boundaries for sexuality and music, especially his bisexuality. So it kind of, that song just kind of feels like a step backwards. Like, just like, oh man, sex is good.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just kind of undermines some of the good that Pete Shelley's lyrics did. But Mad Mad Judy. Yeah. Yeah. And even, there's even though a couple of those Pete Shelley songs that I just don't feel anything for, like Money kind of has that flamenco guitar to it, and Hollow Inside is really repetitive, and A Different Kind of Tension has that robotic cadence and then an actual robot voice in the one song. It's like, I don't know. I would have stuck the, well, I would have reorganized it so the second side of this album would be unlistenable, but I would have made that A side killer by taking all Steve's songs and putting them on the B side and then moving that raison d'etre and I don't know what to do with my life to the A side.
Yeah. Like I said, I think it's their weakest album. At least as far as the classics go. I haven't listened to any of their reunited records, but
I haven't either. I've always been scared too.
Yeah, they're just
I know what a reunited
anytime one of those band old sounds like. Bands get back together and start putting out albums, they usually just leave a lot to be desired. That being said, I don't dislike this album. It's got some weak moments, but you know, I know what they're doing. They seem to be trying to go for a little more of a post-punk Wire type sound. They definitely use a lot of flanger on their guitars.
Yeah.
Obviously pretty inspired by Wire, who used a lot of flange. It sounds good though. I mean,
their
tone really well on this record
is great.
Kind of made me wish I hadn't sold my flanger. Just wasn't getting those sounds. So
yeah. Yeah, I mean, Pete's voice is great. Like, I've always loved his vocals, and they are just as good here as they are on any other Buzzcocks album. And their guitar tones I love their guitar tones. They're warm, and they're bright, and they're bouncy, which then the bass helps along, too, by, like, those rubbery riffs. And I don't know. I just love them. I guess I love the essence of the Buzzcocks in there and their music and just, I don't know, the feel that they have, even though I may not love, you know, these songs nearly as much. But
you say you don't love me, well that's alright with me, cause I'm in love with you, and I wouldn't want you doing things you don't want to do. Oh, you know I've always wanted you to be in love with me, and it took so long to way things have to be. I wanted to live in a dream that couldn't be real, and I start to understand now the way that you feel. You say you don't, you say you don't, you say you don't love.
Did you know that when they reunited, they toured with Nirvana?
Yeah, it was like Nirvana's last tour? 94?
Yeah.
I saw that. Strange.
That's so weird.
I wouldn't... I mean, I imagine that was purely Kurt being a Buzzcocks fan.
Yeah, I mean, Kurt did that kind of stuff
probably,
all the time.
Probably Dave Grohl, too. Yeah. You know, he put the Meat Puppets on his... He sang three Meat Puppet songs on the MTV Unplugged or something like that.
I mean, he put Jawbreaker on that tour and...
Ooh, here's something from Rolling Stone in 1980 about this album. I love dated reviews. Singles Going Steady's American debut boasted as many pithy hooks and punchy backbeats as Elton John managed in a decade. I don't know what Elton John has to do with anything.
What? What? Who wrote that?
Sweet and sour pop punk pop vignettes made up this English group's official American debut. Boasted as many pithy hooks and punchy backbeats as Elton John managed in a decade. And Buzzcocks whipped theirs out in little over 18 months. So they're saying the Buzzcocks have more hooks and on this than a decade of Elton John music? I don't understand what that he's even trying to say. Why would you even compare them? They're British?
They're poppy? I don't know.
I mean, and that's also a little dismissive of Elton John. I'm not even... No insult to the Buzzcocks or anything, but I imagine in 10 years Elton John released better songs than this Buzzcocks album has. And they would probably agree.
Yeah, I don't know. That's such a weird comparison to make.
What else did they say? These guys have a problem, though. The Buzzcocks have yet to cut an album that hits with as much musical wallop as even the most offhand singles. That's a little fair, I guess. I don't know. It was a weird article from 1980 by Michael Gilmore. In Rolling Stone magazine.
Why did the Buzzcocks break up?
So they were recording demos for their fourth album, and then Pete Shelley took up a solo career, but it does not say why they broke up.
Because I've never understood why they... Like, I've never heard anything about them. Like, I knew they broke up, but I've never heard anyone say, like, oh, they hated each other, you know?
AllMusic says they had problems with their record label. Rapid pace of the band's recording and performing schedules quickly had the effect on the group. Not only were the concerts and recordings wearing the band down, the members were consuming alcohol and drugs in high numbers. They embarked on their first American tour in late 79. Inner and outer tensions afflicting the band culminated in 1980 when they drastically cut back their performance schedule, but they persevered with recording, cutting the EP parts 1, 2, and 3. United Artists was bought out by EMI in 1980, which cut back the support. They were working on the fourth album, but EMI prevented them from recording it. They wanted to release Singles Going Steady in the UK before the band put out their fourth album. They refused. EMI didn't give the band an advance to cover the recording costs of the fourth album, so they broke up the band. So it was just a fight between the record label, and they were probably just worn out from touring. Thanks, EMI. Who knows what that fourth album would have sounded like. Yeah. So, we have sleuthed our way to the the answer. EMI ruins another.
EMI.
Oh, what would you give this album?
Probably right around 4.25?
4.25?
Maybe a 4.
4.25, that's awful high. I would give it like a 3.5, just because those Steve songs are so bad, and then the Pete songs that aren't very good are really long and repetitive.
Yeah, probably about it's half of me.
I'd say it's a half of a great album. I'd give it a 3.5. Yep. Well, moving on to our EP for this episode. We might have even less to say about this. So we have number 114 on the EP charts, and it is Sudden Fun, and their self-titled EP, Sudden Fun.
Fun. She has gone, we could go far away.
they're not Devo.
They are not.
One of their
lyrics. They don't even try to be. So I don't get that that line.
So there is very little information about this band whatsoever. This was released on not on Berserkly Records, which doesn't show any other releases, so I'm assuming it's a self-release. Especially once I learned that they were from California. So that was a shock. I was like, what? I thought they were a British punk band. Okay, so here we... Let's get into some confusing personnel stuff. So here's the only thing that I can say is going to generate conversation. So the personnel is Dennis Kerr on vocals, Vince Black on guitar, John Hunt on guitar, Bob Howe on bass, and Derek Ritchie on drums. So, that's what Discogs says. According to the comments on a blog called Killed by Death Records, they were from Berkeley, which is why the not on Berserkly was the name of their label, I guess. And they originally went by the name Liars. And so they changed their name to Sudden Fun and recorded this 7-inch, and then nobody cared about them anymore after that. Like, they had generated some buzz as the Liars, and the production on this was so bad that people hated it, which, listening to it now, it sounds like a 70s punk album. I don't see what was so terrible on the production that it was unlistenable.
Well, not so much, like, the recording quality itself, but it's pretty bad. It's pretty poorly played.
Yeah.
And
okay, so that got me into, like, okay. Yeah, it's poorly played, but I don't even think that those names I mentioned play on every song, because Rate Your Music also shows Keenan Shaw on bass, Gary Phillips on guitar, and Jamie Riddick on guitar. And I don't know if those were just other members of Liars, and, you know, they were just listing members because they don't have... So I don't know for sure who plays on this release. Because then when you go into this Killed by Death Records blog post and you look at the comments... Let's see. I'm trying to find it. Vince Black says, I'm the guitarist on these tracks. I know how to find Derek the drummer, but I can't find Dennis Kerr the singer or Mark the bassist. And then Derek Ritchie says, I am the drummer from The Liars, later Sudden Fun. Here's some facts. The record was produced and mixed by Kenny Laguna from The Archies, along with Dan Alexander at Dan's Tewksbury Recorders. The title song was a 16-track recording. The players were Dennis Kerr, Vince Black, John Hunt, and Mark Hale, Derek Ritchie, and the other tracks were 8-track recordings. And somebody sitting called Jonathan Lyerly says, I was the Liars guitarist, starting with the famous coal miners benefit at the MAB. You know, the famous coal miners benefit.
Oh, yeah.
There was a photo of us in Rolling Stone. Soon after that, we got bankrolled to cut some tunes at Tewksbury Studios in Richmond, California. We cut 4 or 5 tunes. Sudden Fun, the title track being one of them. Mark Hale was the bass player, Derek was the drummer, and Dennis. None of the other ones we recorded appear on this record. Don't know why. I eventually started another group with my girlfriend. That's when Vince joined. So there's like a, I don't know how to even describe this. So these songs aren't from the same recording session. Only the song Sudden Fun is. So who are those other guys?
Mixed up some tapes. That's weird.
Yeah, it's so confusing.
It's not very good. None of it is.
No, it's...
And you said something earlier about the way that punk was kind of a fad when it first started, mm-hmm. and most people seemed to, I don't know, didn't really expect it to last long, and everyone really quickly started trying to do their own thing or a different thing. And this sounds like a fad record.
Well, yeah, I listened to it and I was like, oh, this is definitely a British punk band. And then I found out they were from Berkeley. I was like, what?
This sounds like someone was like, hey, punk is cool. Let's do that.
Yeah.
And because they threw some shit together and really didn't even seem to bother to learn their songs very well.
Well, also, who's in this band and how many people played on this record? And it's potentially, 8 or 9 different people played on this thing?
Yeah. It is a... It's a mess.
okay, so you made me think, like, okay, this is somebody going, let's cash in on this fad. And so I wanted to look and see what U.S. punk albums had come out that year, and there weren't very many. They were mainly CBGB's bands. So if you go look at the EPs, though, is where you start to see who's putting out music. And the Misfits put out Horror Business in 79, right. And Night of the Living Dead, and who else has put stuff out? Well, nobody.
Yeah.
So nobody in the U.S. was really doing punk outside of the CBGB scene, and they're only technically punk bands. Yeah, it's very strange. Were the Dead Kennedys doing anything in 79 at this point?
They had formed. Right?
They hadn't put out Fresh Fruit yet?
Fresh Fruit came out in 80.
Right, so they had formed. Do they have any singles in 79? I guess not. The California Uber Owls single came out in 79. What was X doing? Adult Books
in 78, which was just a single.
And Los Angeles didn't come out until 80. So this really is right before the U.S. figured out how to play punk in their own way. That wasn't just New York art punk. So yeah, it does make sense. So you didn't like any of these songs at all? Or...
there were some, like, okay parts. I mean, like, the basic idea for most of the songs were fine. Like, they were not, like, super catchy, but moderately catchy. There's at least one song. I gotta look at it again, because...
there's four songs. Sudden Fun, Teenage Public Enemies.
Oh, gosh. They're just Teenage Public Enemies. The lyrics are really
Writing on
bad.
The Wall. We're not Devo. Writing on the Wall and Dada Revolution. Dada Revolution had like the worst recording. It was like super echoey, and it sounded like a completely different singer too.
Maybe it was that song. Yeah, that might be the one where whoever sang it was bad. And like, I don't mean like, oh, they were pitchy or like, because whatever, this kind of punk band doesn't need some like incredibly perfect pitch delivery.
Yeah,
you just need to like commit to singing it. It's really bad delivery. It's just like like,
well,
really
I felt
self-conscious.
Like the guy was, I feel like the guy was trying to rip off Johnny Rotten too, the way he would like hold out words like that, like it's like, what are you doing?
This is not a hidden gem.
Nope, not at all. I mean, it's just a bad take on a thing. I don't know.
It was trying really hard to be punk.
Mm-hmm. There's a picture of the band in the liner notes, and they're like wearing polos. It's like, oh, you're just some dudes. I mean, I'm not saying you have to wear costumes or anything like that, but you don't look like punks. I mean, we know what punks in 79 look like, and they look ridiculous, but...
yeah. Yeah.
They tended to dress that way on purpose to show other people how punk they were, I guess. You know, they may not dress that way in their everyday life, but in their liner notes they did, and their band shoots. I don't know, it was weird. I don't know who these guys were. They do seem like the type who might listen to this episode and then correct us and send us an email. Although, if they're responding to a blog, I don't know. It's real weird.
Yeah, it's so funny. They just look like the Knack, but without the vest.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. They look like they could be in that band Hooters. Yeah, I don't know who... who were they? They have the liner notes here, too. There's a lot of notes here. Food courtesy of the Sam Spam Sandwich Shop. Long live the East Bay Beat. Which, I guess this means they were the first East Bay punk band. I don't know if they were the first, but...
the first to release anything.
I guess. They'd stuck around. They could have been Gilman Street legends. I don't know. It's not fun to listen to.
No.
It's clearly just copying what was already wrote in England by this point. This isn't the cassettes. This is I don't know. Not enjoyable.
What would you give it? The Carpets?
Yeah, right. I always do that. Yeah. No, it's not the Carpets. It's not the cassettes either.
I would not give this a very high rating. One and a half. 1.75.
Oh, that's true. That doesn't really... Yeah, I was going to say 1.75. Because I was going to say it doesn't meet our 2.0 standard of playing your instrument competently.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, 1.75 is probably fair.
I'm cutting off that quarter point for just for that complete lack of trying to sing.
I don't know. I didn't have fun listening to these albums. Neither one of them. I mean, the Buzzcocks had some good songs on it, but overall I was just tired of it by the time it was over with.
Well, what are you going to do next time?
Yeah. Well, next week we're doing the year 1987.
Oh boy.
And we're doing number 62 on the album charts, and it is Wipers Follow Blind, which is a later Wipers record. And our EP is number 12, which seems very high. And it is Henrietta Collins and the Wife-Beating Child Haters and their EP Drive-By Shooting. This is the Henry Rollins Band before they became the Rollins Band. So this is a post-Black Flag, pre-Rollins Band, shock jock punk record? I don't know. I think we're going to have a lot to say about that one.
Yeah.
Well,
if you're playing along, you can hear that Wipers record on Spotify, I believe. And yeah, the Henrietta Collins is, I believe, on YouTube.
Yeah. I hate even saying their full name. Yeah, it's on YouTube. So continue to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We're at PunkLottoPod. We have an email. It's PunkLottoPod@gmail.com. Email us if you want a free button. And our website is punklottopod.simplecast.fm. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Don't leave us any bad reviews, because come on, why are you going to be like that? anything else?
I think that covers it.
Cool. Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
It's Sophie. It's Sophie.
Sophie. I've got the music. Hold on. Stop. I'll do the music.
Happy birthday, happy birthday. Happy birthday, happy birthday. Happy birthday, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, sweetheart.
Oh, thanks.